42. Mere Vapors. But as for Ishii Lin, his was the part most important at their inception. He readily understood the implications of surges being granted to men and caused organization to be thrust upon them. As having too great power, he let it be known that he would destroy each and every one unless they agreed to be bound by precepts and laws. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 2, page 4. Shallan awoke to humming. She opened her eyes, finding herself snuggled into the luxurious bed in Sabariel's manner. She'd fallen asleep in her clothing. The humming was pattern on the comforter beside her. He looked almost like lace embroidery. The window shades had been drawn, she didn't remember doing that, and it was dark outside. The evening of the day she'd arrived at the plains. "Did someone come in?" she asked Pattern, sitting up, pushing stray locks of red hair from her eyes. "Someone's gone now." Shallan rose and wandered into her sitting room. Ash's eyes, she almost didn't want to walk on the pristine white carpeting. What if she left tracks and ruined it? Pattern's someone's had left food on the table. Suddenly ravenous, Shallan sat down on the sofa, lifting the lid off the tray to find flatbread that had been baked with sweet paste in the center, along with dipping sauces. "Remind me," she said, "to thank Polona in the morning. That woman is divine."
No, I think she is... exaggeration?"
"You catch on quickly," Shallan said, as Pattern became a three-dimensional mass of twisting lines, a ball hanging in the air above the seat beside her.
"No," he said. "I am too slow. You prefer some food, and not others. Why?"
"The taste," Shallan said.
"I should understand this word," Pattern said. "But I do not, not really."
"Storms. How did you describe taste?" "It's like color you see with your mouth," she grimaced. "And that was an awful metaphor, sorry. I have trouble being insightful on an empty stomach."
"You say you are on the stomach," Pattern said. "But I know you do not mean this. Context allows me to infer what you truly mean. In a way, the very phrase is a lie."
"It's not a lie," Shallan said, "if everyone understands and knows what it means."
Those are some of the best lies."
"Pattern," Shallan said, breaking off a piece of flatbread. "Sometimes you're about as intelligible as a Bavlander trying to quote ancient Vorin poetry." A note beside the food said that Vatha and her soldiers had arrived and had been quartered in a tenement nearby. Her slaves had been incorporated into the manor's staff for the time being. Chewing on the bread, it was delightful, Shallan went over to her trunks with the intent of unpacking. When she opened the first, however, she was confronted by a blinking red light. Tin's span read. Shallan stared at it. That would be the person who relayed Tin's information. Shallan assumed it was a woman, though since the information relay station was in Tashik, they might not even be Vorin. It could be a man. She knew so little. She was going to have to be very careful. Storms. She might get herself killed even if she was careful. Shallan was tired, however, of being pushed around. These people knew something about Urethiru. It was, dangerous or not, Shallan's best lead. She took out the span reed, prepared its board with paper, and placed the reed. Once she turned the dial to indicate she had set up, the pen remained hanging there, immobile, but did not immediately start writing. The person trying to contact her had stepped away. The pen could have been in there blinking for hours. She'd have to wait until the person on the other side returned.
"Inconvenient," she said, then smiled at herself.
Was she really complaining about waiting a few minutes for instantaneous communication across half the world? I will need to find a way to contact my brothers, she thought. That would be distressingly slow without a span read. Could she arrange a message through one of these relay stations in Tashik, using a different intermediary, perhaps? She settled back down on the couch, pen and writing board near the tray of food, and looked through the stack of previous communications that Tin had exchanged with this distant person. There weren't many. Tin had probably destroyed them periodically. The ones remaining involved questions regarding Jasnah, House Devar, and the Ghost Bloods. One oddity stood out to Shallan. The way Tin spoke of this group wasn't like that of a thief and one-off employers. Tin spoke of getting in good and moving up within the Ghost Bloods.
Pattern, Pattern said.
What? Shallan asked, looking toward him.
Pattern, he replied.
In the words,
Of this sheet? Shallan asked, holding up the page.
There and others, Pattern said. See the first words?
Shallan frowned, inspecting the sheets. In each one, the first words came from the remote writer, a simple sentence asking after Tin's health or status. Tin replied simply each time. I don't understand, Shallan said.
They form groups of five, Pattern said. Quintets. The letters. Each message follows a pattern. The first three words start with one each of three of the quintet of letters. Tin's reply, the two that match.
Shallan looked it over, though she couldn't see what pattern meant. He explained it again, and she thought she grasped it, but the pattern was complex. A code, Shallan said.
It made sense.
You'd want a way to authenticate that the right person was on the other end of the span read. She blushed as she realized she'd almost ruined this opportunity. If Pattern hadn't seen this, or if the span read had started writing immediately, Shallan would have exposed herself. She couldn't do this. She couldn't infiltrate a group skilled and powerful enough to bring down Jasnah herself. She just couldn't. And yet she had to. She got out her sketchbook and started to draw, letting her fingers move on their own. She needed to be older, but not too much older. She'd be dark-eyed. People would remark upon a light eyes they didn't know moving through camp. A dark eyes would be more invisible. To the right people, though, she could imply that she was using the eye drops. Dark hair. Long, like her real hair, but not red. Same height, same build, but a much different face. Worn features like Tin's. A scar across the chin, a more angular face. Not as pretty, but not ugly either. More straightforward. She sucked in stormlight from the lamp beside her, and that energy made her draw more quickly. It wasn't excitement. It was a need to go forward. She finished with a flourish and found a face staring back at her from the page, almost alive. Shallan breathed out light and felt it envelop her, twist about her. Her vision clouded for a moment, and she saw only the glow of that fading stormlight. Then it was gone. She didn't feel any different. She prodded at her face. It felt the same. Had she... The lock of hair hanging down over her shoulder was black. Shallan stared at it, then rose from her seat, eager and timid at the same time. She crossed to the washroom and stepped up to the mirror there, looking at a face transformed, one with tan skin and dark eyes, the face from her drawing, given color and life. It works, she whispered. This was more than changing scuffs in her dress or making herself look older as she'd done before. This was a complete transformation. What can we do with this?
Whatever we imagine, Pattern said from the wall nearby. Or whatever you can imagine. I am not good with what is not. But I like it. I like the taste of it.
He seemed very pleased with himself at that comment. Something was off. Shallan frowned, holding up her sketch, realizing she'd left a spot unfinished on the side of the nose. The light weaving there didn't cover up her nose completely, and had a kind of fuzzy gap in the side. It was small. Someone else would probably just see it as a strange scar. To her it seemed glaring and offended her artistic sense. She prodded at the rest of the nose. She'd made it slightly larger than her real one, and could reach through the image to touch her nose. The image had no real substance to it. In fact, if she moved her finger quickly through the tip of the false nose, it fuzzed to stormlight, like smoke that had been blown away by a gust. She removed her fingers, and the image snapped back into place, though it still had that gap on the side. Sloppy drawing on her part. "How long will the image last?" she asked.
"It feeds on light," Pattern said.
Shallan dug the spheres from her safe pouch. They were all done. She'd likely used those up in the conversation with the High Princes. She took one from the lamp on the wall, replacing it with a dun sphere of the same denomination, and carried it in her fist. Shallan went back into the sitting room. She'd need a different outfit, of course. A dark-eyed woman wouldn't. The span reed was writing. Shallan hastened over to the sofa, breath catching as she saw the words appear. "I think some information I have today will work." A simple introduction, but it followed the right pattern for the code. Pattern said. She needed the first two words of her reply to start with the proper letters. "But you said that last time," she wrote, hopefully completing the code. "Don't worry," the messenger wrote. "You'll like this, though the timing might be tight. They want to meet." "Good," Shallan wrote back, relaxing, and blessing the time Tin had spent forcing her to practice forgery techniques. She'd taken to it quickly as it was a kind of drawing, but Tin's suggestions now let her imitate the woman's own sloppier writing with demonstrable skill. "They want to meet tonight, Tin," the reed wrote. Tonight? What time was it? A clock on the wall read 1:30 first night bell. It was just first moon, right after dark. She picked up the span reed and started to write, "I don't know if I'm ready," but stopped herself. That wasn't how Tin would say it. "I'm not ready," she wrote instead. "They were insistent," the messenger returned. "It's why I tried to contact you earlier. Apparently Yasna's ward arrived today. What happened?" "It is none of your concern," Shallan wrote back, matching the tone Tin had used previously in these conversations. The person on the other end was a servant, not a colleague. "Of course," the reed wrote. "But they want to meet you tonight. If you refuse, it might mean a severing of ties."
"Stormfather, tonight?"
Shallan ran her fingers through her hair, staring at the page. Could she do it tonight? Would waiting really change anything? Heart thumping, she wrote, "I thought I had Yasna's ward captive, but the girl betrayed me. I'm not well, but I will send my apprentice." "Another one, Tin?" the reed wrote. "After what happened with C? Anyway, I doubt they'll like meeting with an apprentice." "They don't have a choice," Shallan wrote. Perhaps she could have created a light weaving around herself that made her look like Tin, but she doubted she was ready for something like that. Pretending to be someone she'd invented would be tough enough, but imitating a specific person? She'd be discovered for sure. "I'll see," the messenger wrote. Shallan waited. In distant Tashik, the messenger would be getting out another span reed and acting as intermediary to the Ghostbloods. Shallan spent the time checking on the sphere she'd carried in from the washroom. Its light had faded a small amount. Keeping this light weaving going would require her to keep a stock of infused spheres on her person. The span reed started writing again. "They'll do it. Can you get to Sabariel's war camp quickly?" I think I can, Shallan wrote. Why there?
It's one of the few with gates open all night, the messenger wrote. There is a tenement where your employers will meet your apprentice. I'll draw you a map. Have your apprentice arrive at Salas's moon height. Good luck.
A sketch followed, indicating the location. Salas's moon height? She'd have 25 minutes, and she didn't know the camp at all.
Shallan leapt to her feet, then froze. She couldn't go like this, dressed as a light-eyed woman. She hurried to Tin's trunk and dug through clothing. A few minutes later, she stood in front of the mirror, wearing loose brown trousers, a white buttoned shirt, and a thin glove on her safe hand. She felt naked with her hand exposed like that. The trousers weren't so bad. Dark-eyed women wore them when working the plantation back home, though she'd never seen a light-eyed lady in them. But that glove. She shivered, noticing that her false face blushed when she did. The nose moved when she wrinkled her own as well. That was a good thing, though she'd been hoping to be able to hide her embarrassment. She pulled on one of Tin's white coats. The stiff thing went all the way down to the top of her boots, and she tied it at the waist with a thick black hogshide belt so that it was mostly closed in front, as Tin had worn it. She finished by replacing the spheres in the pouch in her pocket with infused ones from the lamps in the room. That flaw in her nose still bothered her. Something to shade the face, she thought, hurrying back to her trunk. There she dug out Bluth's white hat, the one with the sides that folded upward at a slant. Hopefully it would look better on her than it had on Bluth. She put it on, and when she returned to the mirror, she was pleased with how it shaded her face. It did look kind of silly. But then she felt that everything about this outfit looked silly. A gloved hand? Trousers? The coat had seemed imposing on Tin. It indicated experience and a sense of personal style. When Shallan wore it, she looked like she was pretending. She saw through the illusion to the frightened girl from rural Yakaved. Authority is not a real thing, Yasna's words. It is mere vapors, an illusion. I can create that illusion, as can you. Shallan stood up taller, straightened the hat, then went to the bedroom and tucked a few things in her pockets, including the map of where to go. She walked to the window and pulled it open. Fortunately, she was on the ground floor. Here we go, she whispered to Pattern. Out she went, into the night.